Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki Jai. Namachar Shihadas Thakur Ki Jai. Prem Sekhar Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhupada Jai. Shri Advaita Gadadhar Saraswati Gaur Bhakta Vinda Ki. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopi Gopinath Shamakun Radhakun Giri Govardhan Ki. Shri Mayapur Dham Ki. Shri Vrindavan Dham Ki. Gangamaya Ki. Yamunamaya Ki. Bhakti Devi Ki. Dalsi Devi Ki. Nantakoti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki. Shri Harinam Sankirtan Ki. Manta Raja Srimad Bhagavatam Ki. Samaveda Bhaktivinda Ki. Gopivananda Hari Hari Bhava. Avaya Sama Devotees. Avaya Sama Devotees. Avaya Sama Devotees. Avaya Sama Guru Narunga. Avaya Shri Prabhupada. And I got my other prayers this time. Om Gyanatam Andesya, Gnani, Vinashalakaya, Chakshu, Nidhitanya, Nidhitanya, Tasma Shidhu, Vedi Maha. Hittitanya, Mornistan, Stapitanya, Nabutale, Svayam Rupa, Kada Mayam, Vedatu Sva, Pandati Khan. You got your mind? Huh? Can you call it? Oh, I didn't write them down. Oh, that's the ones I should have written. Okay, Om Namo, okay, Om Namo Bhagavata, okay, Om Namo Bhagavata Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavata
Vasudevaya. Do Om Namo Bhagavata Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavata Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavata Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavata Vasudevaya.
Then I'm supposed to say these.
No.
I'm done? Oh. All right, cool. This is the Hare Krishna temple, right? Okay, it's trying to get in the right now. Alright, Sutta, okay, Shivagatam, first canto, 9th chapter, text 43. Sutu Vacha, Krishna Eva Bhagavati.
Krishna Eva Bhagavati.
Wow, this is a good one for me. It's like simple Sanskrit, huh?
Yeah.
I can pronounce this. Mano Bhag Drishti Vrit TV.
Mano Bhag Drishti Vrit TV.
Atmani Atman Na Atmani Atma Nam Avesha.
Atmani Atma Nam Avesha.
So Nit Svas Sa Upa Rama.
Sa Upa Svas Rama.
That in it. I didn't practice Sanskrit. Should I just do it again a couple times?
Three times.
Sutu Vacha.
Sutu Vacha.
Krishna Ivam Bhagavati.
Krishna Ivam Bhagavati.
Mano Bhag Drishti Vrit TV.
Mano Bhag Drishti Vrit TV.
Atmani Atmanam Avesha.
Atmani Atmanam Avesha.
So, Nitpasva Sa Uparamat. Sutta Vacha. Krishna Ivam Bhagavati.
Krishna Ivam Bhagavati.
Mano Bhag Drishti Vrit TV.
Mano Bhag Drishti Vrit TV.
Atmani Atmanam Avesha.
Atmani Atmanam Avesha.
So Niyat Sva Sa Uparamat.
So Niyat Sva Sa Uparamat. Krishna Eva Bhagavati Mano Bhag Drishti Vrit TV Atmani Atmanam Avesha Sutta Vacha.
guys done now?
If you want anything, think of the mouse.
Okay. Hey, you know how we say, you know, men, and we say, would any women like to chant? You know, we say that. Well, anybody who doesn't identify with being a man or a woman, would they like to chant now too? Right? I just want to make sure up to date. Huh?
We don't have men first and women first. Everybody can chant anytime.
Okay.
It's just, it happens. That
any more men would like to chant? Anyway, I didn't see Shishi. Okay, I was thinking I should be more serious. All right. I gotta put my glasses back on.
You know, you edited the puzzle.
All right, I gotta say the words, right? What?
Word for word?
Yeah, I know. Then I, but then I figure, well, what the hell, I've already gotten so far. Oopsie. Anyway, this time I'll begin the class here for a while. Sutu Vacha.
Sutu
Goswami said.
Krishna.
Lord Krishna. Supreme Krishna said, go ahead. How can they spell it? No, because this is a typo. Krishna. Or is it? Is it in the word for word there? Krishna?
Yeah.
Why do they do it that way?
After there is arrow.
Huh?
He said, why is Krishna spelled with
an
E?
Is it a typo or is it some grammar thing?
It's a grammar thing.
Huh. There's a story to that, I'm sure. Okay. Evam. Only. Bhagavati. Unto him. Manaha, with mind, Vak, speech, Drishti, sight, Ritibi, activities, Atmani, unto the super soul, Atmana, the living being, Avesha, having merged in, Sa, he, Antasvasa, inhaling, Upa-ramat.
Upa-ramat.
Became so, all right, since I've already, why is it spelled Krishna? You know the grammar issue?
It is, the way it is it's onto the Supreme, so the word Krishna becomes Krishna. The grammar, Krishna is subject.
Huh.
And then Krishna is the, not nominative case, but locative case. Locative case, onto Krishna.
It's Krishna in the verse, though.
Well, because if you go up on the top,
oh, I see.
Because of grammar, it becomes Krishna.
That's where it starts with the E.
In the word, you know, it's interesting. I think we can. So should we? We can still say Hare Krishna, though. Sutta Goswami said, Sri Bhishma. Huh? Oh, do what?
No, we don't
follow. Oh, what? Can I just read it?
It's okay.
Okay. Sutta Goswami said, thus Bhishma Dev merged himself into the Super Soul, Lord Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, with his mind, speech, sight, and actions, and thus he became silent and his breathing stopped. That's probably a pretty good thing for me to just stop. Anyway. Purport. The stage attained by Bhishma Dev while quitting his material body is called Nirvikalpa Samadhi, because he merged himself into thinking of the Lord and his mind into remembering his different activities. He chanted the glories of the Lord, and by his sight he began to see the Lord personally present before him, and thus all his activities became concentrated upon the Lord without deviation. This is the highest stage of perfection, and it is possible for everyone to attain the stage by practice of devotional service. The devotional service of the Lord consists of 9 principles of service activities, and they are 1, hearing, 2, chanting, remembering, serving the lotus feet, worshiping, praying, executing the orders, fraternizing, and fully surrendering. Any one of them or all of them are equally competent to award the desired result, and they require But they require to be practiced persistently under the guidance of an expert devotee of the Lord. The first item, hearing, is the most important item of all, and therefore hearing the Bhagavad Gita and later on Srimad Bhagavatam is essential for the serious candidate who wants to attain the stage of Bhishma Dev at the end. The unique situation at Bhishma Dev's time of death can be attained. even though Krishna may not be personally present. His words of the Bhagavad Gita or those of Srimad Bhagavatam are identical with the Lord. They are sound incarnations of the Lord, and one can fully utilize them to be entitled to attain the stage of Sri Bhishma Dev, who was one of the eight Vasus. Every man or animal must die at a certain stage of life, but one who dies like Bhishma Dev attains perfection, and one who dies forced by the laws of nature dies like an animal. That is the difference between a man and an animal. The human form of life is especially meant for dying like Bhishma Dev. Sutta Goswami said, thus Bhishma Dev merged himself into the super soul, Lord Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, with his mind, speech, sight, and actions, and thus he became silent and his breathing stopped. So that's this, we're going to die. So it's happened many times before. We've had a lot of practice at this in that sense. But in the human, I can take these off now. The human form of life, as it says here, there's a faculty to proactively manage this, I suppose, deal with it. We have that faculty to, you know, what's the point? This is happening. What's it about? Sometimes it's said that to acknowledge one's death or the possibility of death or the temporality of existence, that's the first stage of philosophy, of being a philosopher. And the human form of life is particularly well suited for that, though I will say I think it's a quality of the self, of the soul, because I did, I remember this is from the 70s, and it was a side story, but they were doing those, they were teaching that, this is a side story, that gorilla, Coco the gorilla, how to sign language. And the Coco the gorilla had a little pet cat, this is famous, named Ball, and then when the little baby cat, something happened to it, died, and then Coco gorilla was sign languaging how he missed the cat, and the cat died, so there's some acknowledgement. So it's the self, but it's not that the human form creates this proclivities, it's just that it's a facility, it helps to express it, it helps to explore it. It's particularly well designed for exploring these things. So why not take advantage of it? They say in the human form, you know, we say in the Bhagavatam, there's 8,400,000 species, and you know, I did a little research on this one. But, you know, Prabhupada in our conversations, you know, we're not talking about modern categorizations of species or anything. But from the Puranic perspective, which is concerned about spiritual evolution and transmigration, facilitating the growth of the conditioned soul and its experience and the whole pastime of that, the human form is, you know, out of 8 million categories from the Puranic perspective that facilitates this evolution or expression of consciousness, there's 400,000 for the human beings. And then in this conversation, I guess it was with, was that the one, I think with Shama Sundar and the devotees, maybe Bhakti Sudhamra is here, but they were talking about Darwin, I think, at the time. Anyways, it was one of those conversations, and I think that was the one. But, you know, the species is not the same. You know, what's with the human form? Is it different races? Is it different this? And one word that was thrown out was jata, you know, classes or, you know, of human being. And actually, at one point, Prabhupada was saying, you know, even two brothers, they could be considered different species or whatever you want to call it within this Puranic category. Because it has to do with the consciousness of the human being, the faculties of consciousness. Has something to do with that. And anyway, so the thought comes to me, it's like, why is there so many for human beings within this type of categorization from the Puranic? Because there's so much faculty for expression of consciousness. That, you know, sometimes we say, you know, you can, in a human form, one could be even worse than the animals. You could be even more beastly than animals. We've seen that. People say how the tough history is now, life is now. You know, go back to the 20th century. It wasn't that long ago, like World War II, you know. People could be really beastly. And that's not all, folks. But life can get tough. We're basically living like a Hollywood dream compared to how life can go down, you know, in recent history. We have a tough. It's always tough when it's your problem. But it can get tougher. Not that that should be... Anyway, so be thankful, it could be worse. Somebody else could be, I mean, I could be giving even worse class than I'm giving, so Anyways, let's suck it up here. So Bhisvadev is going to quit his body. He chanted the glories of the Lord, and here's something interesting. He chanted the glories of the Lord, and by his sight, he began to see the Lord personally present before him. But Krishna's there already, isn't he? Anyway, so it's interesting how it's being worded like this. You know, it could be explored. But so it's encouraging. You know, he's focusing, he's chanting, and Krishna's personally being present before him. Yet he's already there, so I don't know. Anyway, so for us, perhaps that's something helpful. So this higher stage of perfection is possible by everyone to attain. And Bhisvadev, of course, is Mahajan, and Krishna's there, and Yudhisthira's there, and the Pandavas are there, and the whole GBC is there, and, you know, everybody's there. And, you know, and by chanting, somehow Krishna's appearing before him. So, and then it says that later on, this unique situation can be attained even though the Lord may not be personally present. I think that there's something hopeful to draw from this. Then Prabhupada says, you know, Krishna's present in the mantra. Krishna's present in the sound. He's in the Bhagavatam. So, Krishna will be there for us. I assure you. Not that I can assure you of anything, but that would be the soundbite I would toss out at this point. But I think that's all right. I had an experience. I was doing Rath Yatra in D.C. I don't know if Sheshi was president at the time, but maybe not. I think it was before that. And anyways, there was some crazy, I was there with Maduha, and there was some crazy guy there. And I was used to, in Boston, you know, you get drunks in Harvard Square in Harinam, and you just kind of go away drunk. And they sort of, you know, they're all brave until you show them a little attitude. And I think this guy was on meth or something, a cocaine, and it wasn't working, you know. And I'm like, well, now what do I do? You know, and so I wasn't paying attention, and this guy had a guitar, and he whacked me over the head while I wasn't paying attention. You know, so I got knocked out. And I was a younger devotee. But at the time I was thinking, I had this doubt at the time. You know, my mind is all over the place, as you can tell here. And, you know, I'm thinking, how am I going to take a Krishna the time of death? You know, it's just not, you know, maybe, you know, I mean, you know, you're supposed to think of him purely, and someone was saying, even if you think of a loud, you have to come back, and oh my God, I'm going to come back louder, So you're young, okay, I'll confess, you know, you're young, and, you know, there's young girls in the temple, and you're young, and you're maybe not always thinking of Krishna, so you get all these thoughts in your head, oh, so many thoughts. How am I going to be thinking about Krishna? I got knocked out, and I'm out of it, and I didn't realize I was out of it until I started coming out of it, and I realized. But as I was coming out of it, I guess the Madhua called an ambulance or something. I was coming out of it, and I was just absorbed in this like three-dimensional diorama of Krishna and the cowherd boys. It's like that nectar devotional picture where they run around the Yamuna or something, and it was like the diorama. It seemed like it was alive or something. You know, I was just like absorbed, like, holy cow, what the hell, you know, like, whoa, you know, and I'm thinking, wow, and then what am I thinking? I'm not thinking about any of this other crazy stuff I'm usually thinking about, you know, that's what I'm thinking, right? And suddenly, wave after wave, the soundtrack of the mind came back. I'm not thinking about this, and then it came back. I'm not thinking about that, but at the time, I was like so impressed. I wasn't thinking about anything else. I was like so overwhelmed by this vision thing. So and then it all came back pretty quick, but... Dude was freaked out. He thought I died. He thought it was his fault. Anyways, it all worked out in the end. Oh, this is the craziest thing. So it was a crazy guy and he ran off. So I think they caught him. And then I was up in Philly and I had to come back to... Shishi was in Philly at the time, I think. But then I had to come back. And the DAs tell me, look, these guys are going to play around. Every time, they're going to call you down from Philly. And then they're going to call and sick, they can't make it. So they're going to keep doing that until you don't come. And then they hold it. You know, so they says, are you into this? I said, that ain't worth my time. You know, so we didn't do it. But then this guy, he's kind of a crazy dude. He showed up at the Philly temple. And, who was that Pujari? The name just lost me. Priyaka? Yeah. So, our guy, Narayan Kavachi was there. Anyway, so I was downstairs and they got me. They says, look, I think we got the crazy guy. He was here, he's upstairs. And so they brought me upstairs and Prayaka was on top of the, you know, Ryan Kavachi came up. Prayaka was on top of him. He was like this jujitsu karate, you know, marine guy. And he was just like surgically like whacking him. You know, like he knew exactly where. And this dude, he was big. He was freaked out. And so Piraka, you know, all the guys, and they kind of says, you know, is this the guy? You know, he's there like freaking out. And I'm looking at him like, I think it is. You know, and Piraka gave him a couple more things, you know. And I think Narayan says we better let him go so he doesn't sue us or something. He saw a vision of death talking about that. It's in the temple. So he got the mercy. All right. So so if he can get the mercy, we can all get the mercy. If that dude can get the mercy, we can all get the mercy. So just give it your best shot. Any of these processes will work. It says here, I'm going to go with it. Why not? Just do them. Any of them, all of them, whatever works for you. Just do it. Hearing is most important. Why not? And what do we hear? Other human forms. Okay, I got that. I got more to say. So, human form of life. So, what do we like to hear a lot? I can't answer this question. Because I want to. I know, you know.
Krishna.
Well, yeah, what's the other word?
Maya.
The name of the movement. Yeah. That's what we like to hear a lot. So, I got that little heart. So how do we, you know, this is how I got the little Hare Krishna address. I love that because I have like a tape, a loop, you know, my MP3, and I always hear this. And that's my first PDF, the happening one. So there's this Hare Krishna address. This is in 66 in December. There's a whole story to this. Yeah, could you flop it to the image, the next PDF? In the page, just one page down. Point, or just scroll down. Next page. Yeah. Okay, that's good. I don't know, it got screwed up. But you see, that's the cover of the album. They did 1966, they did the album. Actually, the record producer had seen that article in the East Village Other. What is it, Save the Earth Now or something? And he got interested, and he went to the temple with his wife. This producer did a spoken a verse. It was a specialty, like spoken recordings, and he did famous people like Malcolm X and whoever else. It was a list, and you know, and he wanted to do Prabhupada. He saw the chanting, he read the article, came to the temple, so he wanted to do Prabhupada. So the devotees went to this recording studio. They did the that's the back of the record. That was the front of the record. Yeah, so they did this recording, and this recording, I was reading Satyaraj, and on this recording is the Hare Krishna address, which we'll get to. And Satyaraj did some articles in BTG, and he made this kind of connection. You know, this album actually helped launch book distribution, because this is the first, they didn't really have books then. This is like the first kind of big outreach, and, you know, that was mass produced. And what was the couple of things he says? Oh, the people at Macmillan got this album. And they were the ones who then contacted the devotees about doing the Macmillan Gita. And also we know probably more famously, the Harrison and the Beatles got this album. You know, they were chanting Lennon and they had the album. Then Harrison contacted Kaufman, to try to connect with the devotees. So this album, interesting album. And in it, Prabhupada had this Hare Krishna address. So, you know, what's the most important hearing? And chanting is Hare Krishna, I would suggest, and the evidence being that we tend to call this the Hare Krishna movement, and we do chant it a lot. So, explain the cover record album. Oh, so let's go to the text, if we can. The text part? The other one, not that one. We're coming to that. That's what we did this weekend, that's why I didn't prepare so much. Back to the text. Well, I prepared, but I didn't prepare as much as I could. No, the Hare Krishna address text more. If you could. Yeah, with all the yellow on it. Yeah, thanks. Oh, you can't see it so good. But, all right, so one thing, you know, so what are we doing? You know, self-realization, thinking of Krishna. So, you know, in our present state, sometimes you think, this is an artificial position on my mind. I mean, you know, because all this crazy stuff. But here, Prabhupada says it's not an artificial position, you know, but I'll go through it. We're reviving, but it's chanting Hare Krishna. We're reviving something that's natural to ourselves. Our Krishna consciousness is natural. This is the original, you know, all living souls, we are originally Krishna conscious entities. So this is something we're reviving, we're purifying the heart so this thing manifests. So we can do this proactively in a human form. Maybe in other, because it's natural to the self, it can do it in any form. But with an animal form, okay, I have to confess, I got this little bunny rabbit, because I got it for these kids, and I got Prabhupada playing in my place all the time, so this rabbit's, you know, it's like, what bunny that takes a birth and he has Prabhupada all day long? So, you know, this isn't an ordinary bunny, I assure you, but passively, you know, this bunny's here and, you know, but as human beings, we can proactively do it. We can proactively do it. We have that faculty to do this proactively. What I'm saying, it's natural to the self, and we have this faculty to proactively do it. As spirits that were originally Krishna conscious through association, time, since time, so it's bound by time, our association with this material energy. Immemorial, you can't count it, but it is bound by time, apparently. It's now polluted, so it wasn't once polluted. It's now polluted by material atmosphere. But we can revive that natural condition. The illusion is called Maya, hard struggle. This illusory, it's illusory struggle. It's not a real condition. I mean, it's a struggle, but it's not like imagination. Well, what is imagination? But it's just not the real condition. But it could be stopped by the revival, again, revival of our Krishna consciousness. That's the natural condition of the self. We're awakening something in the heart that is present there, that's our natural, essential condition. It's not an artificial imposition of mind, even though it seems like that, perhaps in our present position. I gotta think of Krishna.
My God.
I wanna think about whatever, but no, I'll think about Krishna. No, it's a practice condition. It's like physical therapy. Someone gets in an accident or something, I can't think of it. Pushkar's kid's a physical therapist. Can't think of anybody's names. Preeta, right? So sometimes you get an accident or something, and you, or your daughter, right? Yeah. Sukhita's daughter. It's like you can't use the muscle. It's like you can't use it. But then you have to go through all this therapy to practice using that muscle until, you know, you can't use it. It's all, I don't know, I don't even want to think about the kind of accidents people have. But, you know, you have to go to this therapy just to get it back to its natural condition, and it can be painful, you know? So it may seem like that, and it might be thinking, like, I don't want to do this, it's too hard. And then the therapist makes you do it and coaches you through it to get you back to that natural condition. So in some sense, it's like that. But the natural condition is to move it, you know? Our natural condition is Krishna consciousness. So by hearing it, it's revived, da-da-da-da-da, chanting Hare Krishna. This Hare Krishna is directly enacted from the spiritual platform. So I know there's all kinds of analysis, you know, the pure chanting, this and that. The chanting itself is pure, I would suggest, and this verse seems to support, it's directly enacted from the spiritual, it has its own autonomy. The question is, how much are we receptive to that? So how much is our heart opening to receive the signal, if you will? But we don't have to worry about the mantra. The mantra's doing quite fine. It's the incarnation of Krishna. It's how much our heart is open to receiving it, I think is the thing. And then we say, you know, it's good to hear, you know, Prabhupada says it in here, you know, it's more effective hearing from the pure devotee because his heart's already, or her, the heart's already open in the expression. So it's they're fully, you know, the full experience is there. You know, people said that with Prabhupada, you just felt the full presence of the words that he was saying because he was experiencing it. You know, he was sharing the experience. It wasn't just he was repeating the words. Perhaps that's part of this. It springs automatically from the spiritual platform, so we don't have to worry about the mantra. I think we're more concerned about, and the more we chant, the more the heart becomes open. So what's the loss? So this is what we're doing to get ourselves into that. Oh, what is this mantra? It's a form of addressing the energy of the Lord. Both Krishna and Rama are forms of addressing directly the Lord, and they mean the highest pleasure, eternal. So, you know, there's some good stuff going on with this mantra. Hari is a supreme pleasure, potency of the Lord, potency when addressed, helps us in reaching the supreme Lord. I've also heard it described, it's like a prayer to Krishna, please engage me in your service. You know, I want to be your friend again. I want to do something for you again. So it's like a prayer. We want to enter into our re-enter our relationship with him and her, Radha Krishna. Actually, I was reading Dravanaksha, you know, and Prabhupada said a couple of times, I thought the first time, maybe it's one of those, maybe it's a typo or it was just a one-off, but he was saying the Supreme Person of Godhead, Radha Krishna. I says, oh, that's cool. Then he said it again, the next paragraph. So it was like on purpose, he was saying that. You know, it's there, a lot you can deconstruct from that. That doesn't sound like a good word, but there's a lot to consider, that meditate as you can, I suppose. All right, so the three words, Hare Krishna Rama, are transcendental seeds of the Maha Mantra. The chanting is a spiritual call to the Lord and his eternal energy, hurrah, for giving protection to the Krishna soul. The chanting is exactly like a genuine cry by the child for the mother. Where's that kid who's doing it? Bring that kid back in here, crying to his mom. She's just here, right? All right. Mother Hari helps in achieving the grace of the Supreme Father, Hari, or Krishna, and the Lord of Himself, such a sincere devotee. Oh, here was the other thing. That's why I put this. I think that's good for me, before I get in more trouble. No other means, we should do this. Spiritualize the effect of this age of the chanting of Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Krishna. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Rama. All right, so another thing about this album, and that's why I put the drum here. The night before they went to do the recording is when somebody showed up at 26 Second Avenue with a mridanga. That was the first time they had a mridanga, you know, just appeared, you know, the night before the recording. And somebody just walked in, and then the devotees asked him, can we use the mridanga? He was like, oh, no, but he came back the next morning with the mridanga, and they used it. It was the first time they used the mridanga. It was for this recording. And then the Brihat Mridanga, because it helped inspire the Gita, and it helped inspire, get the, you know, George and the Beatles involved, which is so influential for that generation. And they're still in the Gita as cultural influence. And what was the other thing? Oh, and then that night, or was the next day, I was reading the Nirmita, that's when Prabhupada got a letter from Mukunda Prabhu at the time, and his wife Janaki, I think. They were out in San Francisco floating around. I don't know the whole story. But they sent Prabhupada a letter, and Prabhupada received it, and they told him, you know, we're out here in San Francisco, and it's happening, the gathering of the tribes. You've got to come out here. And that's when it sort of got the bug in everybody's head that, you know, this thing has the potential to go everywhere. You know, it's not just a little New York. Because, you know, you're in New York and just getting started. You know, like a little kid, and I'm here, and, you know, mom and dad and Prabhupada. And this is reality, you know. But, you know, it was this dawning that this is a bigger world, you know, of Krishna consciousness that we're going to explore. All right, speaking of bigger worlds, you want to put that back to another thing up? The brochure? The program, I guess. So we had this little thing this weekend. Bhaktivedanta Swaminathan Studies, this thing we're doing here. We had a little workshop, and we had to do it on Zoom, which is interesting. We had people from all over the world. You want to scroll down a little bit? This is the house, Mount Vernon. Not, this is here in Gainesville. Somehow Brahma and Hiramaj bought this thing. You know, Hiramaj, I don't know the whole story. He had some money from family or something, and he had to buy real estate, and Brahma, they bought this house, and they're going to use it for functions, and, you know, they're going to use it for VIHS or other things. It's like a nice stately house down by the Duck Pond, so you can use it. I think the U.S. president once lived there, at least that's the story we're saying. So it's a nice, you know, it's a nice little stately house, and so we had it there. I mean, it wasn't much here because we bought it, but there was only a few of us zooming, but we featured it in the brochure, so you can scroll down. Anyways, we can pass this around, but Brahma gave a little message. So this was about fifth canto stuff. And the thing is, right now, there's so many devotees. We can go to the program perhaps a bit. You can scroll through it a little bit. This is some of the things. We're talking about, go to the next page. And here, right there, yeah. So we have all these, like, Rishi Raj, you know, spoke, and this Pavan, I can't see. Pavaneshwar, yeah, he's working with Dhanavir Maharaj's materials. He's a, you know, and different people who are doing, you know, the thing is at this stage, you know, someone spoke about Radha Mohan. He does a lot of videos. He's like the public relations director. But Meander did some stuff. Krishni Sutton talked about this historical model. I can't get into details, but for 1,000 years they had models and Jyoti, you know, we so and. a lot, you know, sort of the gathering of the tribes, you know, at this stage in our unfolding, there's a lot of different people doing research, and so we're trying to create a sangha, because they're all studying the same topic. It's like an academic conference where you share your research and you develop a discourse and a dialogue and friendships and relationships, this conversation, our own discourse, so we're trying to develop that community of scholars. So it was very successful that way, it seemed. Everybody seemed to want to do more, and there's value in it, because you're doing your research and you want to share it. And also, you know, there's different approaches. There could be a bit of a blind man and the elephant phenomenon going on here. I mean, Sukadeva Goswami says an introduction to the fifth canto, cosmology. Nobody understands it perfectly, not even Brahma. I mean, because how can you? It's unlimited. Krishna's material energy is unlimited. Krishna himself doesn't understand it perfectly, because his ability to understand everything perfectly is an eternal competition, his ability to create more and more stuff to understand. You know, so it's not like it's some static Aristotelian Greek thing where you just get to a certain point and you buzz off it. That's it. We're there. It's ongoing. It's over. We say devotional service. Not like you get there and that's it. I'm there. I'm here. I'm cool. Now I can relax. No, it's well, you can relax, I suppose. But it's dynamic. It's unfolding. It's ever increasing. It's alive, if you will. Anyway, unlimited things to research. So it was nice. This gathering of the tribes, very cool. And we did that. You can flip through, you know, all over the world. We came in Australia, India, Russia, Ukraine, you know, California, another foreign country, and Gainesville here. So we did this. It was, here's some of the different abstracts. So we can, that can be passed out. But if you want to go to my presentation real quick, that would be the other PDF. If you know, I should. I'll do this real quick. I did this thing on Jyoti Veda, the whole legacy of the Jyoti Shastras, the Sri Siddhanta, I guess we're out of time, but, Akhandati got me into this. We have a little team working on this book. The tentative title is A Flat Book on a Round Globe, you know. So we're discussing, you know, perspectives of, you know, how do you understand the earth? And because there's a big discourse, you know, and we're going to try to fill it with some substance, at least scholarly substance. I'll leave it there for now. There's been a lot of discourse about perceptions of the earth and space and time. And the thing that came up, and Sataputta put this, I'll leave it there. So these Jyoti Veda people doing the astronomical, mathematical astronomy to predict, this is a good time for sacrifice, this is not bad. And this is very integral to Vedic culture. It's not like this is some sideshow. Here's this verse. The Vedas are indeed They are indeed revealed. This. Go back to that one again. Yeah, don't touch it. Go back to that one again. Leave it alone. Please, thank you. The Vedas are in. They're all good. Anyway, so this verse is from the Brihat Samhita, Jyoti Veda. This is why I need PowerPoint, because I can't remember what the hell I'm talking, excuse my gun, what I'm talking about, whatever the Patala Loka I'm talking about, you know. Scholars date this either 3,500 years old to, you know, 2,000, I mean, they have their way, so, you know, they're a little cynical or whatever, you want to look at from an internalist perspective, but they give this as a very ancient, anyway, so it was saying that, basically, the Jyoti Veda is, you know, this calculating time is essential, you know, this astronomy, mathematical, because to do sacrifice, which is so integral to Vedic culture, stop there. Please shut off your phones during class. Thank you. It is an essential part of it, one who knows that knows all. And then there was another verse up, since this thing isn't working, so this is Brihat Samhita, this is by Varahamihira, we date this about 500 or so, and this is a height of, you know, historical Vedic culture, you know, the Gupta dynasty, everything was purely Hindu, blah, 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 without getting into it, you know, Americans, no Brits, you know, no Muslims, you know, no people from Turkestan or whatever. Just everybody doing, it was Hindu paradise. From a cynical perspective. But so, you know, and this book is a cat, and the thing is, you get to about 500, we start to have manuscripts of things that we still have copies too. Whereas before that, you know, so from a scholarly perspective, you started getting into sort of concrete stuff you can date and give names to. So it's solid that way. So it's an encyclopedia. Anyway, so in the, I don't know what's, but anyways, Christian's a funny guy. He's just messing around here. So, you know, and again, it was more verses about the importance of this role of these people within the culture. There was another thing up there about, you know, the these are the people who developed the Hindu Arabic numerals, you know, the 1, 2, 3, 4, you know, as we, that is so integral to develop a modern science, the modern world, you know, because with that kind of number system as opposed to Roman numerals, you start to get into advanced mathematics. So this is what came out of that tradition, and that quote was from, this is like 650, I mean, in the ancient world they knew it. These things were discussed, and there's this whole scholarship. So the point is, you have this mathematical astronomical tradition integral to the culture, and you also have a Purana cosmology, and that doesn't seem to conform to observable data in the same way that this mathematical astronomy can. And this, and it's not like this is a problem of modern science, which is what the original Satipputa quote from Vedic astronomy and cosmography in you know, 80s, he did some seminars, and this is not modern science versus the Puranas. This was known within the culture in its own authentic context, this dynamism. And there was debates and discussions, how do you reconcile the two? If we can keep going a little bit. Aryabhatta, Brahmagupta, I just brought up some examples of these peoples, and of course Bhaskaracharya, and there was another person. Those three particularly are known as figures in the history, the global history of math and science, math and astronomy. So it's not like, you know, when you study how these sciences develop in human, you know, time and space. Oh, we have a few Hindu friends over here. You know, some of my best friends are Hindu mathematicians. These people are central. There's a quote from Brahmagupta here. George Sutton, he was one of the leading founders of the modern history. He was the leading mathematician of his age. You know, so these are 800. These are huge canonical figures in the globe. They're not just Hindu artifacts. And yet, there are also these Jyotisha, Jyoti pundits, whatever you want to call them, Jyotishas. Bhaskaracharya, if we can get it, you know, as we know. Oh, and they're all talking about the sphere of the earth as a globe in their works. Here's one. It was a commentator on Bhaskaracharya. He says the mathematics. So, and the roundness is determined by those who have destroyed contrary opinions. So sometimes, it was a very real perception. And if we can lock in another few down further. Eclipses, go back. One back. So, you know, he was commenting on Brahmagupta. There was a one verse, solar and lunar eclipses are not caused by Rahu. And then a few verses later, Rahu, which stands there, covers the sun and the moon. So he's acknowledging both traditions. And if we can get the next one, so that would be Brahmagupta about 600 or so. And then Prithudaka Swami, he's about 800 or so. And he's giving a commentary on this, and it sounds almost post-mortem. The statements of the Shastras are, you know, these Shastras intend to explain the results of eclipses. Whoever causes the defectiveness of the sun and the moon, that is Rahu for them. There's another one. Whoever swallows the luminary, that is also Rahu for them. So however, you know, while the true eclipser is not known, anyways, my point is these debates were discussed within this context. I'm not giving a definitive analysis of what this means. So while these, you know, so maybe within this context of our discussion, we're not, you know, still the mathematical astronomy works. It's integral to Vedic culture to predict time and place for astrology, for sacrifice. And I'll wrap it up. So these debates were and Bhaktisiddhanta commented on Bhaskaracharya. We have translations of Bhaktisiddhanta's commentary of translations of Bhaskaracharya and things that he said about him. The next slide. If you can get it, this is Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj before he established the Gaudiya Math. He was doing this. He established a school in this stuff. Bhaskaracharya is the undisputed leader. Anyways, it's a serious part of this culture. These debates were integral to this culture, and it's not new. And one debate. You know, anyways, we're out of time, but there's a lot to. Gyanaraj was somebody. Time of Lord Chaitanya. He's revisiting this debate he was a Vaishnav by all appearances, and he's revisiting these debates, how to reconcile the two, because they've been going on for thousands of years, you know, how they negotiated. And he's reopening, he published a new Siddhanta, like a canonical text in this tradition, where he's revisiting these issues, giving more weight to the Puranas, how to give both of them authenticity and autonomy and their own integrity in a way that they synthesize or they're reconcilable. And after him, he published this book, the same year Lord Chaitanya took initiation from Ishvara Puri, and this is how we credit it, and started the bhakti movement. So interesting, coincidence, and anyway, so there's a lot going on. Yo, if we get to the last slide. So it suggests that a concept of time and space, this is a side of Pudukkha, so these apparent contradictions, this is his, can be resolved by developing a proper understanding of the nature of space, time, and matter, as described in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and a corresponding understanding of the Vedic approach to describing and thinking about reality. Sariputta had criticized some of these Jyotishas maybe locking in, before Ganaraj in particular, locking too much into three-dimensional space as the definitive, and then, bringing in Purana stuff where it fit. But, Ganaraj revisited that nomi. But anyways, there's some concept of time and space which could be a little bit of a stretch to our present comfort zone when these things are being discussed, particularly when you have considering the relationship between these Puranic descriptions of cosmology and the time and space that you can quantify that was also part of, integral to this culture, and it was well known that there were distinctions between the two throughout our recorded history of this tradition. So it suggests that there's quite a lot to explore on a scholarly level moving forward on this topic. But I will say this, the idea of perceiving the earth as a globe, it could be anything. I mean, I'm dead, I'm gone, goodbye earth, I'm out of here. It's really not a central issue to me. But in that sense, but within the authentic tradition, the concept of the earth as a globe, as well as the concept of the Bhumandala, were both well known. It's not a modern introduction at all. It wasn't Copernicus, it wasn't Kepler, it wasn't the British. They knew all the issues. And so in one sense, what we are doing is revisiting and revitalizing a tradition that was already integral to the culture. How to understand these things and bring it, make them relevant. So I'll end with that.
That's very nice.
Yeah. Wow. So anyways, then other people gave their talks. So we're churning this. And also there's different points of view. That's good. Because even if the other guys are all dumb, as compared to whatever I have to say, I guess it's conditioned souls, or at least I'm projecting. I got brilliant stuff, and I don't know, okay, maybe they're okay too. But even if you don't agree with someone else, sometimes there's a saying, a bad sermon is the best sermon because it makes you think, why is that so bad? What do I think? How would I explain it better? So even if it's the exchange of ideas has this powerful, a positive effect, or it can be if taken properly. So it's good to share these ideas. We all have different perspectives. That's personalism. Blind man and the elephant, also a metaphor in the tradition. So it's good to get together and have this sangha. So that's part of what this conference is doing, trying to create a sangha of people. And we're starting to get a lot of people very active, presenting, writing, publishing, get that sangha of people interested and specializing in the topic. So that's what we did this weekend. That's enough for me. All right, anybody want to say something else?
No comment here. Oh.
Okay, sure. Here you go. We're done. Thank you. Anything else? Is that better?
Yeah.
All right. Yes, sir.
Hold on.
So just chant Hare Krishna and don't sweat the globe. Yeah, well, in this one, we're trying to get these people who are already doing research, so it's kind of a closed, I guess, because we're trying to get all these people doing research very active, get to know each other and share the research. And the idea is that will be a foundation for a bigger conference where we can open it up.
What's going on right now?
It was this past weekend. I mean, I can give you some of the materials if you want to look at it. Then we'll maybe produce some videos and articles out of it. He was there. Yep, he was there. He appeared. And also Vrindavan Priya, who does a lot of seminars based in Rishi Rajarik. He also presented this other crew who's very engaged with Dhanavir Maharaj's work. They also presented, that's another active camp, or if you want to call it that, or group. And they have an approach. And of course, we had some of our sadhu, you know, Prishni and Radha Mohan, you know, some people are interested, and Murali, and, you know, others. So there's different approaches, and everybody was there meeting other the tribes, if you will, and discussing.
Do you think that within ISKCON there will be work to close what I see as a big gap between the scholarly academic take on things and things being science, things like the hard sciences, biology, physics, you know, evolution, Big Bang, closing this gap between working on why is there such a big difference between the scholarly academic viewpoint and
Well, the first place, there's not like one scholarly viewpoint of anything, and nor there's one appreciation of the Bhagavatam or what these verses mean. You know, because there's no one scholarly viewpoint, and there's no one devotional definitive, you know, I mean, because there's levels of realization, and there's different ways to, you know, perspectives to engage, you know, it's like, how do we understand the mridanga? Well, it's fiberglass, it's this, it's that, you know, there's so many ways to look at the mridanga. You know, you can play it like this, you can play it like that, you can, this kind of music. There's so many, I mean, you can go endless with the, you know, anything. So why not this, which is the whole cosmos? So, you know, if one is interested in doing that, then you can engage in devotional service. But I wouldn't worry too much about it because, okay, there's a scholarly consensus perhaps, and, you know, and then maybe there's a devotional consensus, So, you know, you can find points of correspondence, but it's a dialogue that's constantly in tension, constantly engaging. That was part of my presentation. This tension, you know, between different perspectives has always been there, even in the culture, and yet the culture went on. So the fact that there's this dynamic tension could be by design. So, you know, at least within the, you know, maybe there's a reason for it. I mean, because the culture itself emphasizes the Jyotisha tradition, which is very much about mathematical astronomy, which is what they do. Now, I mean, in the Jyotisha tradition, it was geocentric, but then everything was geocentric. Actually, in modern astronomy, it's still geocentric. We're on the Earth. The universe is out there. You know, for us, the Earth's the center of our perspective. And we'll flip that around. In the modern contemporary concept, there is no center. It's not like, oh, the sun's the center of anything, or even, the Milky Way's is, you know. So anyway, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's endless, endless, endless. So if one wants to explore these two traditions and find point, you know, to find correspondence and dialogue, why not? And what's the point of that is we're trying to open up avenues of discourse for people to enter into devotional service. You know what I mean? It's like you're sitting at the Sunday feast, which I never do, and talk to new people, you know, where you at, where you coming from, and then you try to find points of correspondence to give them something to hold on to come forward and enter into the bhakti. Oh, you like to eat French fries, well, we make the best French fries, you know, or whatever the issue is, you know what I mean? And why don't you come and we'll cook some French fries and offer Krishna, or whatever, you know, whatever it is. I don't know how to preach. But, so this is like a little bit on the intellectual platform. Maybe it's a little bit, some additional complexity to than maybe which kind of peanut oil or ghee you're using for the French fries, the potatoes, you know, whatever. But it's the same principle. So we're just trying, you know, finding ways to invite people into a comfort level so they would like to move forward on their own initiative ultimately into the devotional activities. So I think that's the real essence of the exercise. But, you know, there's always different opinions. I mean, Krishna gives that facility and la-di-da. I mean, you know, okay, if you want to make it simple, we're right and they're wrong, who cares what they think? Right, so that's cool. You know, but on the other hand, there's okay, this is a fitting topic for a Muni. Yeah, that's my shtick, man. You got it. Whoever sent that, they got it. Figure it out. Oh, okay. That's the deal. Well, he knows me well. We used to be roommates in Boston. Is that Madhava?
Everybody knows the Muni.
Well, he got a little extra bliss, let me tell you something. All right. We done here?
No more questions.
Am I still in the movement? I'm good. Huh? What?
Hare Krishna.
Oh, yeah. Everybody wants to say, you want to do a kirtan or something?
We can.
All right. I don't know. I feel like I've pushed my luck to the limit here, to the edge of the universe. I'll leave it there. Hare Krishna. Onward and upward to infinity and beyond. I'll go to your papa.
What's up, bro?